Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Y'all can go to Destin with them tourists all around. I'll go to South Texas where my friends can be found. Lord, I know that's in Fort Alto.
All right, guys, this is the Deep in the Hunt of Texas podcast coming to you live from Fort Worth, Texas. We are late here on a Wednesday night getting this one out right under the gun. We've had some technical difficulties. The touchscreen on my laptop just decided to completely nuke itself and kind of had to do some Googling here and had to do some canceling. So we're just going to do a solo episode. I think this is actually going to go with the theme of things we've been trying. I don't know if this will be a reoccurring thing. I don't know how long I can talk for. We're going to find out. But I think it's a good opportunity to test my skills a little bit and hopefully take you along for the ride. Today, what I really want to get into is kind of, you know, I don't want to call it lease management. I don't want to call it ranch management. I almost even don't want to call it off-season management. Just kind of all things under deer off-season in the state of Texas that I'm doing. And you know, some things that I've tried that I found successful, some things I've done that I've not found successful. And this is kind of a good time of year to prune things up a little bit around your ranch, your lease, your property, whatever you want to call it, and really start to move that needle as we move into the summer and obviously into the fall. I mean, I know it seems like it's far away, but it's kind of wild to think that bow season's only 5 months away. I mean, it's kind of crazy that I feel like deer season just ended and we're more than halfway there. So I really think it's a good time to start moving the needle. Obviously, by this point, it is March 25th. So I would say almost all the deer, at least in my area, have dropped their antlers. That means that growth has kicked off. So I'm not a shed hunter. I'm not one to go walking through the woods looking for stuff on the ground. That's not my vibe. I get people do it, and I understand there's other parts of the country that maybe go a little bit more hardcore than you know, most. I really don't even know people that shed hunt that much. Usually the sheds I find, I just kind of happen to stumble upon them. I mean, there's one back there, as you can see. There we go. I actually was trying to put up a new spot, just, you know, put a camera up, maybe hang a little hang on stand there just to see if I had anything in a certain area. And I mean, lo and behold, just sitting on the tree line was this antler hanging out there. So I think it's pretty cool that, you know, sometimes you stumble into them like that and sometimes you go look for them and you can't find them. So I think it's, you know, I'll leave my shed hunting up to just the randomness of life. That, and, you know, do a little turkey hunting this time of year. Turkey season is opening this weekend, which I will not be participating. I will be down in Houston, seeing some friends, playing a little golf, going to go watch a little golf. It's kind of, you know, Houston might be the best place to be in the state of Texas this month or this weekend. And you really have to pry that one out of me. This might be the only weekend you get me to say it. You have the Houston Open going on. Golf tournament down there at Memorial Park. You have opening day down there with the Astros, as I like to call them. And then you have the Sweet 16 going on in Houston, University of Houston, playing at home. in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight. I mean, if I'm a Houstonian, a Houstonite, whatever you weirdos call yourselves, I'd say it's a pretty big weekend, so I'm going to go leech off of them for a little bit. I will not be rooting for the Astros. It's, you know, I might go watch a game or two. We'll see. I have plenty of friends that are fans of the Astros. And so who knows? Maybe you'll catch me there in a very neutral outfit. I'm not going to go stir the pot. Last time I was there, it was the Rangers winning the ALCS in 2023. I have no hard feelings. We got the best of them. Storybook is closed. We got our ring. Astros only have one ring. And yes, I'm not mistaken when I say they only have one ring. That's 100% factual. But so yeah, it's going to be a heck of a weekend down in Houston. I'm really excited. And then hopefully, you know, it's tough for me to turkey hunt. Just the property my family has, this is the time of year everyone's just using it recreationally. And I would much rather trade off getting the winters, being able to duck hunt and deer hunt and do that deal when people are traveling for the holidays. But I have no problem with people going out there and good timing and having a good time. So my turkey hunting schedule is incredibly limited. And it usually traditionally has been. So I don't really get out there a ton. I got one weekend coming up in April. I might try and give it a go. I don't really have any cameras up right now. I'm not going to do a whole lot of prep. I kind of know traditionally where they have been and haven't been, or have been and haven't been. We're lucky enough to have a kind of a creek bottom that runs through most of the property. So you can kind of use that to your advantage. I know if you guys want to go back and really get in the nitty gritty, we did a podcast 2 weeks ago with Kobe Steed, and he kind of broke down how to find some of those turkeys. So obviously any kind of water feature, especially a creek with running water, is going to kind of, you know, point you in the direction of all wildlife, but definitely help with turkeys for sure. So I'm going to try and give that a go here in a couple weeks. In the meantime, we're going to be hanging out, playing a lot of golf, maybe doing a little fishing coming up too. That might be more April, May. I'm itching to get back down on the coast. I haven't been down there since January. It's just, you know, when you live in Fort Worth, that, you know, it's one of the downsides of living this far north in the state of Texas is there's some really, really cool stuff going down on the coast that you don't really get to partake in as much as you'd like. Not saying I would ever live in Houston or Austin or San Antonio. Definitely not San Antonio. I'm not going to do my best Charles Barkley impression here, but we all know they got some big women down there. So, but I see why people, you know, you're only 2-3 hours from the coast, and that's super advantageous if you really like to go down there and do the whole fishing thing down there. And obviously, in other parts of the year, there's good duck hunting and especially you go farther south, Laguna Madre, and that whole entire ecosystem is something that's really, really cool that I really don't get to partake in that much. Just, you know, being on the north side of the DFW Metroplex, and that's half the battle is getting across DFW. I mean, this place is turned into a complete mess of traffic and trying to navigate. The people here can't drive. There's people in Teslas with student driver stickers that can't drive, and I don't understand how that does, because the Teslas drive themselves. That's a story for another day. I don't get it. I mean, it's I live in Northwest Fort Worth, and by the time it takes me, if I'm going to Houston, by the time it takes me to get to 45, that's halfway. By the time I get to Ennis, I'm halfway there. It takes me 2.5 hours to get out of town sometimes. So I don't know. I'm not saying my days in DFW are numbered, but I think I'm a little too close to the city. And I think Fort Worth, you know, for better or for worse, might be getting a little bit too big for its britches. I mean, it's gonna be bigger than Dallas one day. That's kind of a weird thing to say, and I don't really know entirely how I feel about that. You know, I think Fort Worth has always kind of had, not calling it the little brother, but a bit of the underdog mentality. And I think that's kind of enjoyed as well. I don't think that Fort Worth has ever had desire to be Dallas or compete with Dallas. where Dallas has always had a desire to be the bigger brother. And I think it's a competition that Fort Worth.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Worth has never really taken part in. There's a great barbecue spot off of 30 and Montgomery called Railhead. Old Charlie Guerin runs that place, and on their cups, you go there, it says life's too short to live in Dallas, and ain't that the damn truth? So, with all that being said, we're going to kind of get into some things that we might be doing in the off season here. I might be doing, I might've done in the past. I might be doing here in the future, but it's obviously a lot of this is arbitrary for those who don't know, if you might be tuning in. Obviously Texas is a just absolutely massive state. So it's kind of hard for me to speak on every aspect. Obviously, I've touched on this before, where North Texas is completely different than South Texas. East Texas is completely different than West Texas. So there's all these different ecosystems, you know, and Texas kind of falls into, you know, totally different regions of the United States. I mean, East Texas is the traditional Deep South. That's you know, where the South begins. If you hear me use the term life behind the Pine Curtain, North Texas, where I'm at, it's very much similar to Oklahoma, parts of Southern Kansas. And then you kind of transition into the Panhandle, which is like the High Plains. It's, you know, you go, if you take 82 across to Lubbock, I mean, you're going to think you're in Kansas or Nebraska. You know, there's, especially you can get into where the Trinity River runs through there, and where those breaks happen. I mean, you have some pretty rough country. I know people think of West Texas as being flat, but before you get up on the Llano Escotado, I mean, it can be some pretty rough country. You get up there towards Rotan, just west of Abilene, not Spring. That's too far west. I'm drawing a Snyder. Thank you. I think that's it can get to have some quite a bit of features there too, but also some cool opportunities is there as well. And then you got up to West Texas. You know, those are the mountains. I mean, that's mule deer, Audad, bighorn sheep. I know there's only like two tags of those a year, but still they're out there. So just completely different ecosystem. So I'm going to kind of speak what I know, at least in my region, and I guess we would technically call it the Cross Timbers. I don't really know what to compare it to nationwide. It's a very kind of unique ecosystem where you'll have pretty big patches of timber, but then you'll have these pretty wide pastures as well that'll have post oak trees kind of spread out through those. And then, you know, you have your creek. Obviously, I'm talking about the creek that runs through my property, quite a different, diverse, ecological, I'll just call it ecological diversity that kind of runs through there in different sorts of trees and whatnot. And I will admit, I need to work on my woodsmanship or my arbor game. There's about 3-4 different trees I can look at and tell you what it is. Outside of that, I'm pretty useless. You know, it's post oak, bodark, elm, and then maybe a western cedar. I don't know. Not a western cedar, just a regular cedar. Juniper. That's what I'm looking for. And getting rid of all those bad boys because, you know, those obviously the cedars are pretty damaging for the habitat. They suck up a lot of water, and they don't provide any kind of habitat for deer almost at all. They just don't really do a whole lot of good. They can't bed under them. They're annoying. I'm allergic to them. So not a whole lot of good things going through cedars. So first thing I want to talk about, really as far as like lease management and improving your property, is this is a great time to get equipment. You know, a lot of people are upgrading things at their lease, and that's a good thing. That's exciting. But you know, to help kind of foot that bill, I mean, deer feeders are not cheap. If you want to get a 3,000-pound deer feeder, that's going to cost you a few thousand dollars. If you want to go get a 7x7 insulated blind, that's going to cost you $4,000 or $5,000. So people might be selling old feeders. They might be selling old deer blinds. If you are someone who's in the market for that or trying to kind of wade into those waters, this might be a really good opportunity for you to check out Facebook Marketplace. I mean, there is a wealth of deals on there right now. I've kind of been eyeing a few things myself. I actually, you know, no free sponsors, but I had an All Seasons feeder. Excuse me, All Seasons blind, a 7x7. I think they call it the Big Chingon, El Chingon. Again, no free sponsors. I can't quite remember the name of it. Well, something like that. Interesting name. And I've just been eyeing it for weeks, and I should have pulled the trigger. I just kind of wanted to let it sit, see if the guy would drop the price. I don't know what I was thinking. I should have messaged him and said, "Hey man, you want to negotiate?" I just kind of let it sit there, and lo and behold, it was gone. But it was only a year old, and I mean, it was $1,500-$1,600 cheaper than retail. So this is a really, really good opportunity. Plus, people are losing their leases. I mean, lease turnover happens every year, whether it's people completely losing their leases, especially around DFW, especially the closer you get to the metro areas. There's a lot of people selling their land that have traditionally hunted. You know, you see that in the western part of DFW, whether it's out in Parker County, Wise County, where people have hunted for years and years, and urban sprawl has kind of taken over just because the land value has gotten so high. That people just, you know, they have a huge number in front of them from development. And not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's what happens. And so people lose their leases that way, or for whatever reason. You know, sometimes people are just assholes and get kicked off their lease. But obviously if they can't find a lease, they might be posting that equipment for sale. So I'm browsing Facebook almost every day, just kind of checking to see what's out there. And you know, the good deals, the thing about Facebook though, is the good deals do not last long. You got to get in there and be ready to mix it up and be serious and be ready to, like, you know, if someone has a good deal, usually it takes some work. There's a lot of times where people find out they're losing their lease, and they're like, they'll cut you a deal if you can go pick it up. I think that's a huge thing as well. I'd offer if you're really trying to negotiate with someone. I'm not trying to make this like a Facebook Marketplace bargaining thing, but you know, it does help. I mean, that's one thing I've learned too, especially as my time gets more limited as I get older. Having a higher capacity feeder is something that is becoming more and more important to me. Because it means less time and less trips I have to make up to the ranch to fill feeders. I've been in a situation where, you know, the biggest feeders I have are 350 pounds. And, you know, you have doe groups hitting that twice a day, and it's only going to last you about 2 weeks. And so they rip through it. And especially this time of year too, if you're feeding protein, we'll get into that here in a little bit. The deer, especially as they start in their growth, they will really get into the protein. I have a buddy down in East Texas, and I mean, they're ripping through 500-600 pounds of protein every 10 days at one point. And so you're really just trying to save yourself the time, because, and that's really the assessment you have to make. You know, is it more worth, do you get more value? And value can be split multiple ways between time, money, and all that. Do you get more value out of spending the money to spend less time running back and forth to make feed runs, or are you more at a place where, hey, I just need, you know, it's worth for me to make a couple extra trips? I'm not saying one way is right, one way is wrong. I'm just saying that it's an assessment you have to make. And I think where I'm leading, just to be truly honest, is I think I'm leaning more towards I just don't have the time that I used to be able to run up to the ranch. I mean, it's and that's just, you know, it's part of life. It's not that anything's changed. I mean, I used to work in one city that was 45 minutes away, and now I work an hour and a half away from the ranch. So that makes a big difference to me, where it's a lot harder for me to run up there on a Tuesday afternoon and go fill feeders. So it's just, you know, life is always changing, and that's something you kind of have to make an assessment on. But getting back to the Facebook thing, you know, get on there. Don't be afraid to travel either. There's plenty of good deals out there, and it definitely is worth it. I mean, guys, in some instances, you're saving you could be saving $2,000+. So if you're up in DFW, don't be afraid to go down to Houston. Don't be afraid to look in Austin. You never know how willing people are, and the worst people can say. And I just moved my mic. The worst people can say is no. You know, maybe someone is really hurting for the cash, and they'll meet you in Centerville to drop off a couple deer feeders or drop off a couple deer stands. And if it's going to save you $2,500 buying a deer stand and two feeders from a guy for, you know, that much off a retail at a year old, absolutely, it's worth it. It's worth renting a trailer. So the more effort you're willing to put in to help the seller, I think the more you will get out of the buyer as the buyer to be able to maximize your, you know, that, I guess that's the term of this little spiel is value. But obviously, you know, and I hate to say this, but you know, I think it's kind of, I don't know if it's sad. It's just the reality. If you want to, and I would tell people this too, if you want to shoot bigger deer, shoot more deer in Texas, go find a way to make a little more money. I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to do that. I'm not telling you to sell your wife or girlfriend's feet pics online. I'm just saying you got to do what you got to do. But in all seriousness, if you can find a way to kind of in this spring, in this summer to pick up, and I know a lot of people do, like for me, I'm in construction distribution, so this is my busy time anyway. But you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you're running into deer season where, you know, you come up a little short for a feed bill, because it's, you know, so much of what happens in Texas is so feed dependent. I know for me personally, I feed, everyone around me feeds, and that's going to be the same for almost everyone in the state of Texas. And so I'm a firm believer in outfeeding your neighbors. I have a good relationship with some of my neighbors, and I think they do a really good job, and in a lot of instances better than me at feeding. And I think it shows for some of their results, to be totally honest. And I think I'm a little bit, and this is a weird thing to say, I'm a little bit inhibited by the size of the property I'm able to hunt, because it is just me by myself, but also that comes with a pretty hefty financial burden to be able to do what they're doing on that scale. And you scale up what they're doing on, you know, 350, 400 acres and, you know, do that 5X. I mean, that's a hefty financial lift. I think this is a good time to be, you know, working overtime, picking up extra shifts, and you're in sales, really bust your ass and get out there and kind of apportion that money out, because you really don't want to find yourself in a situation in the fall where you're, I wouldn't say struggling, but you're to be able to, you know, you're stressing about the feed bill. And if not even making it, because that's going to be the number one thing that's going to impact your deer season, is if straight up, if you have feed or not. And I know not everyone has that problem, but I'm sure people have ran into it before. I ran into that problem when I was very, very early on, just out of college, not making a ton of money. And I'm just like, man, we're inching it along. I mean, we're talking, I'd go dump a bag of corn on the ground and hunt over it for a couple days because that's what was in the budget. So, and you can do it. And heck, I mean, I've killed deer that way, just dumping it on the ground. If you want some help with that, I mean, feel free to reach out. I'd be happy to help you. I'm a big fan of dumping corn on the ground. I think it's a great strategy. There's spots I have where I only dump it on the ground, maybe not in the one bag quantity, but I think it's a little bit of a different presentation. So, but not to get too off track on that, just make sure we're doing the financially smart things here in, you know, March, April, May, June, July to set up ourselves for success in the fall. And so going into the feeding aspect, it's if you are going to feed protein and you do have the financial capability to do that, it's probably about time to start busting that out. I'm not a religious protein feeder. I will do it. I'm not as consistent as I should be. And it really kind of depends. I honestly will let my protein feeding kind of depend on what the weather is going to do, what kind of year it was as far as rainfall. And that's going to be my number one indicator, honestly, for how much I feed in the off season. Cause you're not getting a whole lot of nutritional value to deer out of feeding corn this time of year. There is some value in pattern creation, for deer. And I know that shifts, but the thing is deer you have in the spring and summer, especially come the rut, even if they shift out when they bust out of bachelor groups in September, they're still going to circle back into the areas they're familiar with at some point. So if you're keeping deer in your vicinity via corn, this time of year, it is going to be beneficial for you towards hunting season. But from a nutritional standpoint, it's not really adding a whole lot. It's more of an attractant, where protein obviously is going to be a whole lot more beneficial, especially as I have some concerns, how this summer is going to shake out. And I don't think it's going to be good. I don't know what our rainfall totals are. I should probably have looked that up before I got on this podcast, but it hasn't rained a whole lot so far this year. I mean, we're almost to April, and I think we're already a little behind. And let me just pull this up here for you guys. I know this is terrible podcasting. Let's see. All right. So we are at year to date where I hunt in Montague County. We are down to, we have had 9.5 inches of rain at a year to date average of 6.4. So we're a little down, not quite as much as I thought. But still, it's already getting hot too. We've already had multiple 90 degree days, and I think we're going to be in store for a very hot and dry summer. Something we haven't had. I guess I kind of forgot about this because I lived in Salt Lake City for 2 years, or I guess 2.5 years, and I guess summer of 2022 was incredibly hot, and I just missed out on it because I was in Utah. And it was beautiful every day. But I was talking to my brother about it today, and he was like, yeah, it was like 100 degrees for like 90 days in a row. And I think that's kind of what we're in store for this summer, I'm going to be honest. So I'm going to make a point to at least get a few protein spots up a little bit more often than I normally would. Just from the standpoint is, one, in a drought year, less natural browse, less bioavailability. Also what happens in a drought year is there's less diversity of forage. So I think I'm going to try and supplement that a little bit more this year as well. Things are starting to green up right now. I mean, it's kind of crazy how fast it happens. I was driving home from work today and I just realized that everything was green. All the trees are full all of a sudden. And it felt like 2 weeks ago. or a week ago that all the trees were still bare. It's kind of wild how fast it happens. And, you know, conversely in the fall, it just feels like all the leaves fall off one day and you don't even really get a fall. So I think that's going to be something that I definitely dabble in this year and pay attention to those rainfall totals, because like last year, we had a good rainfall. Was it like a record breaking, you know, top five rainfall year ever? No, I think it actually might have been top 10 though, but we had a very, what it was is we had very consistent rain, very, you know, I wouldn't say timely rains, but all the way into like July, which I would say is not totally common for here, but you know, every 10 days we were getting a good solid rain until, you know, late July. And that just kept everything alive much longer. I mean, there's times in the summer where all the highways are brown, and that didn't happen last year. So that kind of translates to a lot more bioavailability as far as forage, where, you know, some of those plants that would be dying off from heat just didn't because they had the water. So I'm definitely going to try and supplement with some protein. And that kind of brings me to my next topic is, if we get to one of these drier years, like it seems like it's shaking up to be, I mean, I'm not trying to play weatherman here. Definitely check what your water availability is. It's not something I have to worry about as much. I'm lucky enough to, like I said, I have a creek that pretty much always has running water, or water of some sort in it. It will dry up in spots for sure in the summer, but for the most part, it is a running creek. And then we have some 5-acre ponds, some 3-acre ponds, some 1-acre ponds. I mean, we have 1/2-acre ponds. We have little bitty sloughs in the woods. I mean, we are lucky enough because of that creek system to have pretty solid water sources. So it's not something that I am thinking about all the time. If you are a little bit farther west than me or in other areas that may not have a natural water source, and we get into a drier year like this, I would definitely check, explore that a little bit. I mean, there's a few different ways you can do it. You could just obviously just fence off a trough. I mean, that's what guys in West Texas do all the time and have great success with it, is just fencing off like a cattle trough and putting water in it. I've seen a lot of people talk about having success with burying a trough and having it in the ground. And I think the way I had somebody kind of not describe it to me, but if you can kind of find a place to put a trough that, you know, is downhill on the down or at the bottom of a downhill, and you dredge out a little bit into the trough after burying it, so the rainfall kind of flows into there and encourages that. That way you kind of have your own collection system as well. I've seen that as well. So a lot of different ways you can do that. I mean, I think most of you are, if you're listening to this podcast, you're a pretty hardcore deer hunter and definitely have the ingenuity to be able to figure out something like that where you can be able to collect water for your deer and, you know, for other wildlife as well, especially as if it is going to get as hot as I might think it will. I mean, and we'll see. We could get plenty of rain, but I mean, I'm looking at the forecast right now. I mean, for the next 6 or 7 days, we don't have any rain in the forecast, and we haven't had rain for the 5 or 6, 7 days before that. And there's a little bit of rain after that. So I think it's going to be a little interesting to kind of see how this shapes out. I will admit, I am a little nervous to see what it does. Obviously, I think that's probably the biggest impact on antler growth is to see how see what kind of rainfall totals we have. And I think there's a pretty direct correlation between that and what antler growth looks like. And I think there's guys even on high fence ranches that will tell you that those kind of correlate. Also, a great time of year to kind of take inventory on your herd. And also, and just, you know, obviously at this point, antlers has dropped. So if you haven't figured out who made it and who hasn't at this point, that's on you. But overall herd health, overall all deer numbers, it's kind of a great time to start moving into that. But also, if you are out there turkey hunting, it's a great time to scout for deer. You know, there's a lot of data out there showing scrapes are used year round, and they're not just something that is done, for sign laying in the fall. You know, there's a lot of times you end up chasing turkeys in places you'd never think you'd deer hunt, and you end up learning more about what the deer are doing than you ever thought you would have. And obviously turkey hunting is a great way to get boots on the ground to, really explore the habitat. And I think a lot of us too, especially in Texas where, it's so easy to get feed station dependent when you hunt in the fall. And I'm the most, probably the most guilty of it is the fact that, I just get nervous sometimes leaving feed in some instances, not so much anymore, especially during the rut, because it, you know, they're not necessarily quote unquote doing it at the feed. I mean, there was what, I guess it was 2024. I didn't have a deer come to feed until December, but there's just like this weird anxiety where I'm like, today could be the day I can't leave the corn. And it's like, I've been brainwashed in the, you know, I there would be times I'd move off the corn and it's like, it's whispering in my head, like, hey, you know, today's the day he's going to come to the corn. What are you doing in the woods in a saddle? Come to the deer stand. He's gonna be there. And you know, I kind of buy into that a little bit too much, for good or for bad. So it's kind of a, you know, a win lose, I guess, if you will, because you don't never know what's gonna happen. That's kind of hunting. But put some boots on the ground. You might bump some deer. It's not going to be a huge impact this time of year. You might actually figure out what is going on as far as what's going on in places you traditionally don't hunt and your set spots. I know that's been something that has been super helpful for me. Another thing too, and I'm just, you know, let's just be straight. Hogs are a problem, especially where I'm at. And I need to do more to, kind of, it's what's kind of crazy is, it's a great time of year to hog hunt. One, it's fun. It's a blast, whether you're running dogs or doing off thermals, but, and it's not even about shooting hogs. Yes. Shooting hogs, you're going to remove them from the ecosystem. Great. If you really get after them, they will leave straight up. You can run hogs off your property. You might have a different group of hogs come in at some point, but you can run it. They do not like pressure. And if you pressure them enough, they will leave. They will go find somewhere else. Hogs are very pressure sensitive animals. You can find that if you shoot them off of a feeder, they probably aren't going to come back for quite a while. So it's a good time to get out there. And that's something that I struggle with. Not necessarily, or I guess I have struggled with. I know there's a lot of people that put feeders up, especially in spots, obviously in spots that don't have cows, and they just I see hogs and deer eating at the same feeder, and that's something I have a hard time. I wouldn't say experiencing, but it seems like any place I have hogs, I don't have deer. They don't want to be near each other. I've seen even deer in pens that are fenced off that hogs do not get into. I know for a fact they don't because I watch them walk out in circles. If those hogs come into that pasture, those deer are gone. Whether it's daytime, nighttime, middle of the day, morning, afternoon, doesn't matter. Those deer do not like pressure from hogs. I would say even more so than cows. And I know they don't like cows. So I think it's a good opportunity if you can. The more pressure you can put on the hogs, the better your deer hunting property is going to get. And I get if there are some people out there that like shooting hogs for sport and they really enjoy it. I'm not that guy. My hog hunting is to improve my deer hunting. and to improve the, you know, pasture land, ranch, whatever you want to call it. That's where my hog hunting comes from. It's something that I'm really only doing out of necessity to improve the habitat. I get there are people that shoot them recreationally, but that's not necessarily my, I won't say my shtick. But you know, it's something that I definitely key into. And then another thing too, moving kind of circling back to the ranch management part. This is a really good opportunity to get some stuff done before it just gets hotter than hell. I mean, it's already kind of has gotten hotter than hell. So, hustle, guys, go get out there. Whatever you need to do, put those stands up that you bought on Facebook Marketplace. Call your buddies. This is when we do work weekend. We got to stop doing work weekend in September and July. It's miserable. You're going to get half of what you get done in July or in August when it's 115 degrees than you would right now when it's only, you know, 75, 80. It's just going to be a way better experience. Obviously, I know there's some mowing aspects there that don't really matter because it's all going to grow up. But let's get those feeding pens fixed up. Let's get those fix those deer feeders, whatever you need to do them, whether it's welding on a new leg, whether it's replacing the timers, replacing the motorized unit at the bottom. Just the more you can get done this time of year, it pays off in dividends. I've learned that lesson the hard way. Trust me, I've been in there in August in long sleeves and jeans trimming brush that's taller than me, and you're having to get tick checked all the way from head to toe while you're butt ass naked. It's not a fun time. Okay. I can promise you it's not something that I enjoy doing. You know, I don't like my buddies having to dig in my ass crack for ticks. It's not ideal. I got other people who can do that for me. I'm kidding. I hope my mom doesn't listen to this. It's hey, like I said, we had some technical difficulties. It's 11:08 at night here, and we're getting a little delirious. So not responsible for anything I say after this point. I guess it's past midnight on Eastern time, which doesn't really matter for us in Texas, but 11:09 might be a little past my bedtime. So I don't think I'm going to be hold myself too responsible for what I say. So just a couple quick tips here, guys, not going to go a full hour tonight. Just some stuff to think about as far as what you're going to plan out for this fall, as far as ranch management and deer management. You know, obviously if you guys have any questions, Instagram at deepinthehunttx, shoot me a message. I'd love to answer some of your questions, or, you know, if you want to pick my brain on something, I am not the guy who knows it all. I will tell you that right now. I'm not going to be the guy who tells you this is the only way it needs to be. I've been that guy before and I realized I didn't actually know what was going on. And that's a pretty humbling experience. So it's like anything else. The more you learn about something, the realize you less, you know. And I think that's pretty the paradoxical for anything in life, or the paradox of life, if you will, is, you know, the deeper you get into subject, the less you really know. And that's definitely where I found myself with deer hunting over the last 10 years and really diving into that in my 20s is, you know, 2-3 years in, I thought I was the guy. I thought I knew it all. I'd shot a few deer early in the season. I was like, I got them figured out. And life's got a funny way of serving you a big old slice of humble pie. So, but like I said, this weekend I will be down in Houston, Texas. Not doing any ranch stuff, eating a lot of Tex-Mex. We might even throw some more Tex-Mex reviews y'all's way. It's been a little bit since I've done one, probably a couple weeks. I need to start doing more of those and getting out there. One, because it's an excuse for me to go eat Tex-Mex. Not like I need one. There's never a time I need an excuse to go eat Tex-Mex. Okay. It's easy money in the bank for me. I will never, ever have to go and convince me, you know, slide my DM, say, hey, Connor, want to go eat Tex-Mex? It's never going to be a, oh, man, I'm so busy. Oh, I got stuff. Where? When? Who's coming? How many should I seat the table for? Okay. Just keep that in mind. So another thing, too, if y'all have any recommendations, I guess I can't ask myself the ending question here of what the best Tex-Mex place. So I'll just plug Bowie, Texas, Spicy Mexico. It's the best spot in North Texas. It's my favorite restaurant in the world. Go there. Say Connor sent you. They'll take care of you. They don't know my name. They actually just know me as the ginger that comes in every day during deer season. But either way, they'll still take care of you. Tip heavy. Do it with a smile. Be polite. And that's all we got, folks. Have a good weekend. Stay safe. Con dog out.